This spoiler-filled podcast is recorded live, unscripted, and intended for those over 18. Now prepare your ears for the audio stimulation they've been waiting for all day as we step into
the spoiler room.
Yeah, no, I just want you guys to make sure you know it's a fair fight and it's a good match. And okay, break. We are here for our episode 51. If you haven't checked out the mega episode we did last time for episode 50, you should check that out. It's in three parts, but it was great. And now tonight we move on to the latest release, the next installment in the Jurassic Park franchise, which is called Jurassic World. And tonight I have a small spoiler room crew here to discuss some intimate details about this anticipated sequel. First off, we have Mr. Cole Meredith. How are you tonight?
Hello, sir. Thanks for having me. I'm doing great, man.
Glad to have you in the room. And Mr. Paul Salzar's in the his house. Hello, Paul.
Hello. Thanks for having me as well.
Oh, always. And the one and the only Mr. Scott Davis is here to talk some dinos.
I don't know.
Yes, he's doing the entire podcast as a dinosaur. No, just kidding, folks.
That won't get old.
That won't get old real quick. In a film that I subtitle Star-Lord versus the Land Before Time, we have Jurassic World, which it takes place 22 years, coincidentally, after the events of Jurassic Park. Isle Nublar is now a fully functioning dino park theme park, and called Jurassic World, though. Not Jurassic Park. No, Jurassic World. We'll get into that in a minute. And after 10 years of operation, visitor rates seem to be declining, so they decide to design a brand new dinosaur to help bring in the people. But, of course, if science goes amok, the new special dinosaur runs rampant, and we see how it causes chaos in Jurassic World. That sound about right, gentlemen?
Yes.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Okay, so let's see who to start
more
with.
More succinct than the description in my review that I wrote. So
let's start on a positive note and start with Paul. Paul, initial reactions with Jurassic Park.
I thought it was a very good homage to the first one, and mm-hmm. maybe some people will hate the movie because it was so very much like following the same formula as the first one. Some of the events were like the first one, but because of that, I truly enjoyed Jurassic World.
Awesome. Fantastic. And just briefly, Scott, your feelings on Jurassic World after you got done watching it?
I had my share of problems with it, which I'm sure we're going to get into. But actually, for the most part, I thought this was a really enjoyable movie. And I thought it was, even though I don't think it can touch the first one, I think it was the best we've had since the first one.
Okay, and Cole, what about you, sir?
Man, briefly up front?
Just briefly, we'll get into more later, but I just initial feeling.
My initial feelings were, my lady friend and I walked out of the theater, and our initial reaction, we got in the car, it's about an hour drive home, and we were both like, you know, it was worth it for the action scene. Mm-hmm. And we both started talking about it, and by the time we had pulled up into our driveway, we were just ranting about how awful it was. And, you know, we had just watched the first before we went to it, and then I went in and watched the second, and I really don't like it now. I mean, even as an action movie, it's a bad Jurassic Park movie, period. To me, in my opinion, in my very strong opinion, because I love the first two, but it's just, if you put it up against other films of its kind, which I like to do, more modern, like Godzilla or Pacific Rim, I mean, it fails against those. Hardcore. Godzilla has better characters than the people in this movie, if you can believe that. And, I mean, the characters in Godzilla make the characters in this movie look paper thin. And aside from that, I mean, raptors can be trained like, you know, my rat terrier now. I don't know. I did not enjoy the film that much at all.
Okay, well, again, film is subjective, and that's why I love the diverse group of opinions we have in the spoiler room here. I'm kind of in the middle of the road in this. When the credits rolled, I was like, I like the dinosaur parts, but the character parts, yeah. And so I want to talk about that. I want to talk about kind of the three things in it. One, I want to talk about just the overall feeling. We're going to talk about all the homages first that it does to, you know, for the first one that they threw in here. And then I want to talk about the characters. And then we'll talk about all the other bits and stuff, or just see how it moves along. So first, let's talk about this was supposed to be a sequel. It was trying not to be a reboot, but I would call this a soft reboot. Wouldn't you agree, Scott?
I you mean you're stealing my terminology? Sure.
Well, it's so appropriate in this. And Paul, I just want to start off by saying we aren't going to bully anybody here tonight, so just no problems. I know you really loved it. I thought it was okay, but I just got way too many familiar feelings from the first one, and for me that, I guess, kind of bugged me, because some of the stuff I got a kick out of, like, it made sense. Like, the scene where the kids are in the woods and they happen across the original lobby.
Mm-hmm.
I loved that. And I loved the bit where they actually had the Jeeps in there. That all fit. It was the scenes before that where we have our Adamidus Rex, the genetic, very smart hybrid dinosaur, and they're in the glass ball, and I'm like, dear God, they're recreating the Jeep scene from the first one. I mean, from the only instead of the dinosaur head pushing down through the clear glass onto the kids, it's sticking its finger in the glass. Instead of the Jeep falling on the kids, the glass ball. I mean, that really, was, come on, Paul. You got to tell me. They weren't trying to...
That was intentional. That was extremely intentional. They wanted you to get back to that feeling. It was one of the iconic scenes from the original movie. So, of course, they had to recreate it, but they did it in a different way. I mean, you didn't get the same Jeep. You got this geosphere, you know, and it was kind of interesting watching that thing kind of bat around. And I thought it was just a really neat way of making it just different enough, but also just saying, hey... You know, 22 years ago.
And you know what? And I guess I wouldn't have a problem with that if this would have been classified as a reboot.
Oh.
Okay, and see, this is where I ran into a conflict with it, is that there's so many homages and familiarities with this one versus the first one. It felt, as I was saying, and Scott, I think the definition fits here, it's a soft reboot, as in it's a sequel, but they replicate an awful lot from the first one. Wouldn't you agree, Scott?
Yeah, I don't think they were doing it like in the same way of, say, like Mad Max, where you could look and you could, with Mad Max, you could take that as a new movie or as a sequel in some respects. This one, I think they were just kind of trying to recall it, because as I had a note on when I was writing about the first three movies, I'm like, oh my God, it's really been 22 years since the original?
Yeah,
I remember so much about seeing that first movie. I saw it in that first movie in the theater three times. So I think that it was intentional, as Paul said, that they were trying to do it. And I was okay with it, honestly, because I think it was – because the thing is that this isn't like a movie that has disappeared. Like, for instance, if they go through with making the new Big Trouble in Little China, as they're talking about, I'm not saying anything.
No, you can't. You mentioned it. You keep mentioning that we're going to give it validity. If we don't mention it, it will go away.
You know what? That's what we said about Billy Ray Cyrus. It didn't work. You know? Here's the thing.
Sorry. Go ahead.
But you know, if they dig that movie, well, there are going to be like people who have never seen the original Big Trouble in Little China. Jurassic Park is already a classic. I mean, already like we've had like two generations of people that grew up on this movie.
Thanks to marketing, it stayed relevant, too.
Oh, thanks to marketing. I think also just because it was effective, though, honestly. Oh, yeah. I mean, for instance, I mean, they could have tried marketing Hook. No one gives a shit about Hook. You know?
It is dinosaurs, and the world on the whole loves dinosaurs because it makes you feel like a kid again.
Yeah, but I mean, I think these kids grew up on it, and so I think that even they know that. Yeah, okay, yeah, it's like the. I saw this with my nephew. God bless him, great kid. And I asked him. I says, "You've seen all the movies, right?" He says, "Yeah, I've seen them all." You know, he's like 10. He's about to turn 11. He was already seen them all and everything like that, so he knew that was like the Jeep scene. He mentioned it and stuff like that. He's like, but it was so cool. This is why I liked all they did with the Jeep. You know, they changed it so instead of the Richard Kiley narration in the Jeep, it's got the Jimmy Fallon thing. And just like an amusement park ride, it is of course completely saccharine and not really funny. And honestly, yeah. I think the Geosphere got attacked before we could see Jimmy Fallon challenge one of the Velociraptors to a game of charades. it's just, you know, I think it was trying to recreate certain things, but honestly, I didn't feel like it was just shamelessly imitating the original as much as even The Lost World, honestly.
Sure. The Lost World.
Because I felt, and I know that not everybody here shares that opinion, that movie was, there was no reason for it to exist, really, except to make money. This one, but I think they were also trying to make a lot of interesting points and everything, and they were bringing back some of the old scares while trying to bring in some new ones, too. Yeah. So I honestly did not mind that they imitated that. Mm-hmm. I'm minded that they imitated another classic movie. I should bring it up yet, though.
No. Okay, so a little question in a minute. And Paul, you mentioned before, you liked all these homages, correct?
I did, and it wasn't just the actual visuals, too. It was the music cues. When they went back into the pavilion, into that one visitor's area, you got to hear that music, that theme again. It was like, oh, wow, yeah, that brought me back to when I was a kid.
I'm going to say, I'll agree with you there that the Michael Giacchino soundtrack to this was a very respectable, although I think it could have used more bass. He was missing the lower, the guttural. No, sorry, I'm a big soundtrack guy. Okay? And I think Cole will agree on this, because I know Cole does listen to the soundtrack. Well, you all listen to soundtracks, but if you listen to the Jurassic Park, it has some serious bass to it, some guttural low bass, and I felt that was missing in the music here. I mean, I loved hearing the theme again, don't get me wrong, but it seemed a little lighter. Would you say, Cole, the music?
Yeah, I didn't. I mean, nothing against the composer. I didn't enjoy the score at all.
Really?
No, not at all. I mean, I thought it was totally, the timing of it was off to me, to my ear, when the kid is running around and they're pumping that theme out without any dinosaurs yet. Is the part somehow relevant? I don't, you know, it just was weird to me, that whole opening, how the theme was used, and, you know, where they used the themes was really weird to me. I didn't like the way the movie was edited either, but I definitely didn't like how that they come out with that theme while the kid is just running around these structures, these CG structures. There's no dinosaurs. I mean, am I wrong? Maybe I'm misremembering it, but that's my memory of it. Is the first time we hear the theme, it's just Ty Simpkins just running around exploring hotel rooms, and then the big reveal, of course, is the whole view of the park, but there are no dinosaurs. There's no sense of wonder or anything.
Well, I think this plays on what Paul was talking about, though, is that they put that, the way that scene was felt, I felt that they put that musical cue in for the people who had seen it ahead of time, so you know what's coming. You know, I know, I get what you're saying, Cole, but wouldn't you say, Paul, that maybe they were doing that for the people who had seen it, because it building that excitement once again, going, hey, guess what, dinosaurs.
Most definitely.
You know, we didn't see dinosaurs, so I think that's why they kind of put it in there.
Oh, God, sorry if I missed that. I was dealing with a noisy cat here, as I often am.
No, it's okay.
No, yeah, if I missed that, I apologize. I hate when I reiterate. I've got my spray bottle now, so I
can spray a cat.
Yeah, I hate when I miss what somebody else said. That's my least favorite thing. But I know, I mean, even aside from that, I can't think of a single theme that stands out. Mm-hmm. Aside from, you know, reprising the originals, I can remember the theme from The Lost World.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the theme that John Williams did that was separate from his work in the first. But
right.
I can't pick out anything from this movie that isn't the original themes from the first.
It was a little tough to pick out, that's for sure. But I really think the musical cues were for helping to that homage and for the people who had seen it so you could anticipate it. You know, so for me, and I think we know what Cole's feelings are on these homages.
Do you have a favorite homage? Because I do.
My favorite was when they revisited the lobby because it was plot driven.
Mm-hmm.
It made sense. It didn't feel like it was forced. And I think this comes off of me from having watched previous week's Poltergeist. Okay, and in all honesty, I think Poltergeist ruined it a little bit for me because when I watched Poltergeist, all the original bits they did in there were actually good. The problem I came into is when they shoehorned the references or they shoehorned scenes from the original into it.
Gotcha.
And I think that's what kind of got with me with Jurassic World just a little is I've watched the original so many times, and I knew they weren't going to replicate it. And in all honesty, it got the eye roll from me when I heard that they were making this, okay? So I didn't go in with real high expectations, and I knew it wasn't really a reboot, but the more that I watched it, I'm like, well, this really feels more like a reboot than it does a sequel, even though they were referring to it as a sequel, you know? And for me, I'm like, if they would have sold it as a solid, this is a reboot, instead of being 22 years later, not even really referencing the original, just I think it would have been better than that. But, I mean, some of the scenes, and I get what you're saying, Paul, too, is they were trying to capture the feeling of the original.
Right.
But I wanted a little more newness in some of the shots they did.
I think they would have pissed off a lot of people, though, if they made no reference to the originals.
Well, no. Like I said, the scene where they walk into the lobby and they've got that, loved that. I loved it because it was plot-driven and everything. My point was, like, with those other scenes where they have the Gallimimus field shot again.
Yes.
We have the walking among the brontosaurus. Again, we have the kids in peril in the vehicle with the big Rex attacking again. You know what I mean?
There was familiarity, but let's also keep in mind this is. I mean, I don't know if you're supposed to if this movie wants you to acknowledge the second and third movies or not. It's I think that's kind of up in the air, but this is also the first time we've gone back to an amusement park setting since the original.
Yes.
So some of this is going to be feel familiar because we're not on Isla Sorna. We're on Isla Nublar, the original island where there's all these where you know they have the enclosures,
sure.
they have the exhibits and everything like that.
But again, for me. And I understand where you're coming from completely, but again, then for me, I'm just like, okay, this is great. They did envision, this is what John Hammond envisioned. Mm-hmm. And especially when we get introduced to the billionaire that is funding this and how he wanted to preserve John Hammond, I'm like, okay, I liked that, you know, the fact that that's...
I liked him a lot in the movie.
And I liked him a lot, and I liked the scene with the lobby. It was just... The other scenes that were so familiar to the first one, I didn't feel they had to do. I you know, for me, it was just too familiar, I guess, the territory for myself. You know, but I know many people who really loved all the scenes that they replicated, which is awesome. I mean, Paul did too, and that's, you know, great. Just for me, I guess that took me out of it because I went in looking for more of a sequel than a soft reboot. You know, so... but it does lead us to what I want to talk about next, which are the characters. Now, the characters are interesting because unlike the first one, I didn't give a rat's ass about any of them except for Chris Pratt's character. I'm sorry, it sounds harsh, but it's true. I just didn't feel attached to any of these other characters. Scott, what about you?
I have mixed feelings towards the characters, all of them, including Chris Pratt. I did care about them, even though I didn't necessarily like a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, you know, I don't know if you want to get them into them one by one or anything.
Well, just pick out some examples of
well, okay, like the older kid, Zach.
Mm-hmm.
The older kid, Zach, it's weird because we're seeing all these like dinosaurs and they're acting on predatory instinctual behavior of, you know, beating, hunting, mating. And we have this kid, and he knows that he's considered attractive to girls of his age group, but he's too immature to know how to do anything with it. So what's he do? He's like interested in, like, you know, he just kind of stares at them and everything and tries to use that. And he's basically just, you know, trying to exploit those pheromones. And in a sense, he's kind of, you know, and not saying anything against him specifically, a lot of teenagers are like this. They're exploiting kind of their, you know, sexual attractiveness. And it's that this is kind of seen as instinctual predatory behavior that is kind of seen as cute.
Right.
And stuff, even though we see that, well, no, he's because he's got a girlfriend at home. He's just being a dickhead, you know, flirting with everything, flirting with anything that has barely developed tits, you know. And I thought that was, I didn't find him that necessarily likable. I thought it was interesting dichotomy. Chris Pratt, I thought there were times I thought, man, this is good. He's a good throwback character. Feels like they plucked him right out of a serial, you know. So no, it did. It felt like they plucked him out of, like, some Jungle Gym serial and stuff like that, where he's, like, the wisecracking guy, but he's got the right instincts and stuff. And then there were other times when I thought Johnny Karate. anybody who's seen Parks and Recreation knows that Chris Pratt's Andy Dwyer character has a character on there that character made up called Johnny Karate. And honestly, this looked like Johnny Karate if he wasn't kidding. you know, then you get the Bryce Dallas Howard character, which I think you can get into a whole...
We'll talk about her in a minute.
I think you can get into a whole issue with that, yeah.
There's a few things I want to talk about her, but were there any other characters that stood out for you, Scott, besides her? Because I really want to get into her. I really want to talk about her character.
Opie would say something about that, Mark. I liked him as Ronnie character and everything like that. I didn't have anything against Vince D'Onofrio's performance.
Mm-hmm.
I did not like his character because that whole storyline, I think that would also be getting off on another subject, but that whole storyline opened up a whole new can of worms.
Yeah,
we'll get into that later. Storylines,
but Cole, for you, I know you didn't care for the film.
No, I
really
won't get hateful,
but no. But what I'd like to know is, was there any character that appealed to you that you liked?
Not really, man, stood out. Honestly, no. And I'm not trying to be harsh on any of these people. I'm like a hardcore Insidious fan. Mm-hmm. I love Ty Simpkins, man. You know, sure. this movie. This kid is not going to continue. I mean, obviously, this movie's making money, but this kid needs a better role. He can do more than that. And that is as deep as the movie gets, is dealing with a divorce, which, to me, it was done much better in Lost World. It was much more poignant, and it was handled with a lot more finesse than this movie. The characters just fall flat. Chris Pratt might have fared better if he wasn't training raptors. Mm-hmm. With something that looks like a little laser I used for my cat. I didn't buy any of that at all. I didn't like the whole grade B sexual chemistry thing. We come from a room of the most brilliant people in the world talking about some fascinating ideas like chaos theory, like man versus nature. And we end up with Chris Pratt and frickin' Bryce Dallas Howard doing this cheesy, do you want to screw me dialogue?
Yeah.
Come on, Jurassic Park fans don't see this?
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Yeah, there are some great moments in Lost World where the corporation is covering this up, and Jeff Goldblum's like, hey, man, there aren't any versions of the truth. And there are just great character moments, like the whole scene with Goldblum and Hammond where he's trying to talk him into going to the island, and for a second you think, is Goldblum going to do it? And there was none of that. This movie is like typical. I'm talking about Jurassic World. It's just like so typical. Everything in it is so unsurprising and so bottled. And the characters specifically, it takes a lot to make Vincent D'Onofrio look, I seem unpredictable. I mean, he's one of the most unpredictable actors out there. And this performance is like, even his death, which I liked, in terms of this movie, that death was like, you know, the classiest thing in the action scene, really.
You saw it coming a mile away.
Oh, yeah,
even that has been done much better, you know. So no, the characters, I can't vouch for them. I mean, okay. The young actors, I'm not trying to diss any young actors, but the divorce thing was dealt with much better in Lost World. I bought it much more as a child of divorce. The Lost World is where it's at, not this film.
Yeah, yeah. And Paul, what about you, sir? One character that you really liked out of the others, and maybe one character that you didn't care for out of the others.
Gotcha. I'm going to start with the ones I didn't care about, but that's because I think it's, again, kind of playing back to the original ones. The kids. I didn't like the kids because the kids are not supposed to be that likable, I think. I think they're just meant to be, you're supposed to watch the movie through their eyes, and that's pretty much it. Mm-hmm. I didn't like the kids. You know, I followed the kids in the original movie, and the same thing for this movie as well. You know, I didn't get into those characters as much, but I did like them because they were, again, bringing me back to the original film. The character that I extremely liked the most is probably the dinosaurs themselves. I think people forget dinosaurs are the
yes.
Oh, good point. Good point.
Well, they are, especially the way this film ends. You are absolutely right. I'm like, holy crap, they brought more human characteristics to the Velociraptor than they did for half the human actors in this film.
And Rexy makes a return.
And Rexy makes a return, too. That whole, I want to talk about that final sequence in a minute. But, yeah, so you really like the dinosaurs. And actually, we can lead right into that. That was, for me, as far as characters go, loved the dinosaur bits. I loved all the dinosaur bits. I loved how they developed the Indominus Rex, which I was worried about when I saw it in a trailer, and I actually really liked that dinosaur and how it, you know, was put together. Loved what they did with the raptors, the intelligence of the raptors, and getting to see more of the raptors, and, you know, even the big fish dinosaur. I forgot the name of it, but anyway, the Mosasaurus. I loved that part of it. And I loved the park too. I enjoyed the environment that they had. I loved the dinosaurs. Again, especially near the end, because the last. One thing I will say, the last, was it 10 minutes or 15 minutes of the film, when we get into the big climax and the dinosaur fight with the T-Rex and the Indominus Rex, and then we get, you know, Rexy back, that whole segment I really loved. I enjoyed it because it was all dinos all the time. I mean, the dinosaurs actually were given characteristics. You get that one scene when the Velociraptor looks at Chris Pratt's character, Owen, and it actually looks like it's thinking, or like it's saying, no, you know what, I got your back. you know, so I really did enjoy the animation and what they did with most of the time with the dinosaurs. There are some spots where the animation looked better in the first one than it did here, in all honesty.
There's one shot where a raptor is about to jump on, it looks like it's about to jump on into the back of the van.
Mm-hmm.
And
Yes.
I normally don't even point out, like, if the CG is bad. I'm like, guys, it's $150 million. Come on, it looks fine. That scene, I'm like, ooh. They said, you know what? We're hitting our deadline. Mm-hmm. Asylum, can you handle this one?
So I'll agree with Paul. Definitely the dinosaur characters I enjoyed the most. I got behind. I didn't actually want to see bad things happen to the dinosaurs more so than the people. And
I will agree with that. I actually felt worse when seeing. I mean, with one exception. I actually felt worse seeing the dinosaurs getting killed than the people.
Yes!
That might be me just being like an animal lover and stuff
well,
like that.
For too, instance, but
I,
still.
I can't. For instance, I mean, you can't kill a dog in a movie. I will immediately like be like against
Hate
you
the
once
movie,
you
yeah.
once you kill the dog. But like when I saw like you know there's you see the kids and they're in the petting zoo. Earlier on with the dinosaurs, and then you see the scene later on where those dinosaurs are getting picked up and eaten. I'm like, no!
What the triceratops?
And the brontosaurus, of course, obviously has the most tear-jerky
scene.
Oh, actually, you know what? I've just showed my scientific ignorance. They're not really brontosauruses, are they? Thank you, because when I grew up, they were called brontosauruses. But you know what? That's not true anymore.
No,
that's not true. But those things, yes.
Those things. Yeah. Well, the one thing with the dinosaurs that did make them characters, and it surprised me, and Cole, I'm wondering if it surprised you too, actually how much practical effects they did put in this film.
Yeah, oh yeah. That was great.
You got to give props there, wouldn't you say?
Well, yeah, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But again, I don't think they were filmed particularly well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, putting this against my favorite Jurassic Park movie, which is The Lost World, where the camera, even before the dinosaur, Spielberg does something very cool with the camera in The Lost World, and I haven't seen him do it since or again, but the camera is always moving. So from the moment Goldblum shows up on the screen, it's almost like something is after him. And mm-hmm. they do a lot of slow takes where it's almost coming up on you. When he's talking to Julian Moore for the first time in the woods, the camera's coming down from above, going towards her feet. She's talking about something rather trivial. So, right. I mean, what Spielberg did was set up an atmosphere right away in both movies, but in particular the second one to me, where anything could happen at any time, so it wasn't so much about the dinosaurs, it was about your anticipation of them. And that, and he delivered it with some great action scenes, like the scene where she's laying on the glass that's slowly cracking.
Yeah, again, in the Lost World.
There isn't anything in this movie as exciting as that, but I do agree, you know, in 3D especially, you could the practical effects bear far better than the CG ones, but I'll tell you something else. We went to Fitchburg to see this, and because Mad Max was there, we obviously had to go to that. And the 3D for Mad Max is light years better than this. And it's not just me talking; it's my girlfriend and her young lad. I mean, there's something about CG that doesn't make for good 3D. Not that that matters. A movie needs to hold up in 2D to be legitimate, but at least in this point in time.
I think it's the mixture of the CG and the live action. If you have too much CG in the live action, it really doesn't come off quite right in the 3D.
You know, and we didn't, of course, I mean, I think that they, I don't know, didn't they try to re-release Jurassic Park in 3D eventually? I forget, but remember the first three movies, we do remember so much of them because those first three movies, you know, especially the first movie, was the ones that just like said like, oh my gosh, this is what you can do with CG, because nobody knew it. But let's remember also, all those films had a balance between CG and practical effects by Stan Winston.
They built the freaking T-Rex, an actual full-size T-Rex that, according to some stories, had to have yellow rope around it when it wasn't in use, because it could accidentally go off or something or move and actually hurt somebody. That's cinema.
I didn't know that.
That's cinema right there, folks. But for the characters, as far as the dinos, we all agree. I think the dino soldiers are some of the best characters. I didn't have a problem with Chris Pratt's Owen. I liked him. Again, a throwback toss knowledge to Muldoon without feeling like they're replicating Muldoon. I liked, actually, Chris Pratt's Owen's sidekick, Barry, played by Omar Sy. I really liked the chemistry between those two. Would have loved to see that storyline play out, and I'm going to get to this in a minute. Vincent D'Onofrio, thank you. I always mispronounce that.
That's okay.
His storyline with B.D. Wong, it was great seeing B.D. Wong playing the same character, only playing him different, like this guy who's been kind of corrupt over the last 22 years. Love that storyline between Vincent and B.D. Wong. Love their character interaction. The kids, I actually didn't mind the kids until they got them to a divorce backstory, which felt forced to me.
It was.
They didn't need to. For me, they did not, and this is just me with modern cinema, they did not need to spell out the kids' parents were getting divorced. We knew the parents were having trouble as they were leaving. That much was obvious. But that scene on the train where Ty Simpkins cries because parents are getting divorced. I'm like, did we have to put that line in there? I mean, probably not, but
we got a hint too. I mean, when she calls Judy Greer there calls Bryce Dallas Howard, they've got the lawyers in the background because that's why the kids are away, so that they can iron out the details.
But my point was the delivery of the point of that dialogue was not needed. That backstory was not needed because we're in the 21st century. Divorce is more popular than marriage in a lot of cases. People can recognize the signs. I really didn't think they needed to be that blunt with the kids' reaction.
It wasn't meant for the kids, though. It was meant for Claire's character for basically not understanding her family enough to notice that her sister's family was falling apart. That's the thing that you're supposed to note, that she was so separated from her own family, and then her journey to becoming closer to the family is supposed to make that much more sense at the end, where she's actually transformed by the end of this film. So, and I know a lot of people say, no, she wasn't transformed. I think she was.
I didn't see it, and that's where
that's
I was
why they needed to be blunt for people that
no I didn't see her actually the full growth of what they were going for. I didn't see them need that because they already established that she was a hard nose and that she was neglecting the kids and pawning them off to the assistant because she was so devoted in her work and so clueless. I didn't think they needed to throw in the divorce angle in there for it to lead to that for her. We already established that she was a hard nose, though. Yeah.
But there's another scene in there when she's talking directly with her sister, and she can't understand why her sister is just crying, because her sister's crying about the whole situation that her you know, Claire doesn't understand what's going on. And I think that's just meant to show, you know, those points were meant to be there, to be blunt.
I felt it didn't need to be there, just like the romantic relationship between Owen and Claire.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly, even outside of the divorce angle, I see your point on that, but even more so is Claire and Owen did not need a history. In all honesty,
no, they did not.
The way these movies come out a lot of times, I mean, like, it's better if they don't have a history, and then through the traumatic effects that they have, through the traumatic things that they have, we see that they're, you know, uptown, downtown type of couple, that after the traumatic events, it brings them together, and these two put their differences aside and like that. But the fact that they already tried this once, for me, took a little bit away from it. I'm like, you know, and here's the thing, and I can see where the argument goes, and one of you want to point out, I know the argument goes, well, by having those two have a history, you give motivation for Owen to help Claire.
No.
But would you say, Paul, that maybe they did that because he has a little extra attachment to her? That maybe that's why they threw it in, but they don't need to because he's a good guy.
Yeah, he is a good guy, and that's I agree with you there. I honestly think that the whole one date thing, again, wasn't supposed to establish that they had a background together. I think it was just supposed to make her, again, show her that she's very, very different from the Owen character to begin with. And by the end of the film, she's, again, different because she's a lot closer to Owen. She acts like Owen a little bit more. So by the end, you know, when she takes the gun and she uses it, you know?
You know, and I completely agree with you, but on the other hand, this is, again, an element, part of the other things that are going on that are fat that are in this film that could have been trimmed. I see, you know, what you're talking about, but they didn't need that scene. They didn't need to have them be a history. I understand why they put in there, but it absolutely wasn't needed because the way they established the characters and the way the rest of the film plays out, you don't need that scene in, and you establish, they do a good job right away in the beginning establishing that she's a pretty straight business, you know, all about the park, all about these looking at assets. They establish that so well with her character that just like kind of the divorce thing, I didn't feel they needed to throw that they had a one date thing or that whole little scene where you know, they're talking about that and how he's trying, you know, how he tried to get a date or whatnot. They just didn't need some of that lines in there because by putting that in there for me, I'm like, that's even more cliche than a few of the other things. But it's just one of the many subplots in this film, which would have been great and could have been almost an entire film by themselves.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry, Scott.
No, go ahead, man. No.
Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say that I totally hear everything Paul is saying. I mean, it's not falling on deaf ears, and lots of people have come up to me and said, like, this is the best time I've had in a theater in years. And, in fact, the theater guy who gave us our tickets was like, this is a kick-ass movie, man, his exact words. So, you know, lots of people love this movie, but in terms of the Bryce Dallas Howard character, I just want to say I think she's a great actress. And, yeah, a little bit would have gone a long way. I mean, for instance, the very first film, do they even let us know that Laura Dern and Sam Neill are together until Ian asks him, hey, are you with her? And he doesn't even say yes. He just kind of nods.
It's implied. It's implied, but it's
does go a long way.
Yeah, it didn't have to be spelled out to the audience.
No, and it bugs me that we've come, just me personally, that as an adult I can't go in and enjoy a movie on a somewhat cerebral level. Mm-hmm. And it also bums me out that Spielberg's name is on this because he did the first two films, which I love the first two movies.
Well, his name is on the Transformers movies, too. So.
Yeah, not forget.
But you know what? I may even like this a little less. I'm not sure yet. Because it bears Jurassic Park. If a movie's called Transformers, I'm not expecting a bunch of people talking about the chaos theory. You know what I mean? I expect a little bit of that from Jurassic Park. I do, man.
Well, I don't think Michael Bay can spell chaos. But I agree. I actually, you know, this is one of the things where I would agree with Cole on actually in this movie. I have things that I like about I actually did not hate the characters of Claire or Owen. Even though I have problems with them, but together. Yes, I had big problems. I think it was a big problem to have the date history. It was not necessary. I think Claire gets the best character introduction in the whole film. She has a character introduction that establishes pretty much everything you need to know about her.
Yeah.
Without her even interacting with anybody.
Right.
It's just her on the elevator trying to like keep everything straight. And then I think if it was like written a little more with a little more finesse, they could have just skipped over the whole thing, and they could have had sexual tension, they could have had the little flirty thing, and you know what? It wouldn't have come off as nearly as creepy and old. You know, before this movie came out, they actually released that scene on the internet. And it got some like headlines, at least on like all the social media sites, because Joss Whedon, and he later said, you know what, that was bad form, I shouldn't have done it, but Joss Whedon had commented that it was, I couldn't get over the 70s sexist vibe. Now, ordinarily when somebody says that, even someone like Joss Whedon, and I haven't seen something, I'm like, oh, come on, do we have to play that into everything? But then I actually watched the scene, and I'm like, oh God, he's right. This is a 70s sexist vibe. I mean, it was completely, and it didn't play any better in the movie in context. I didn't think it was necessary. I think it actually took away from their characters. And I think it also said some nasty things about the Claire character.
Yeah.
Because instead of having her just be, I mean, you can see her as somebody, okay, she needs to spend, like, pay more attention to the world around her. She needs to know about the people that are in harm's way, especially in her own family and stuff. But she's so driven. She's so career-oriented. This one made her seem like, yeah, and look at her. I mean, all career. You know what that means? Frigid. That's the vibe, that they were trying to convey. And I thought, really, guys, in 2015, that the career woman must be frigid? Well, I was having a problem with that.
And here's the thing, again, like I said, I loved actually all the characters and the main storylines that they were facing. The problem I had was there were so many storylines in this. Paul, would you say we did have a lot of subplots?
Yes.
We did. And the first one that we all love so much, and we're comparing it, but it is a different beast, but the first one was fairly straightforward in its plot. We didn't have a whole lot of subplots. We didn't have a whole lot more going on. And don't get me wrong, I'm all for depth. I'm all for interesting subplots for a film. But this one felt like, we may not get another one of these, so we're going to put all our ideas in one basket, or that this felt like a setup film because they do plan on making more.
Oh, it's obvious there's going to be more of these.
And I guess that was the frustrating thing for me. Had they focused on the Bryce Dallas, the Claire, Owen, and the kids part, I think I would have. And don't get me wrong, I love the film. I gave it a high rating because I was entertained throughout. But the issue that stuck out with me the most was the sheer volume of subplots. I mean, the idea of weaponizing the dinosaurs not only makes sense, you could see that happening, but right there, that would have been a great story that you could have built almost an entire movie on.
They will.
Just that. And I know they will. The problem is that they were setting it up here, and this felt like a setup film almost, because, you know, I'm like, let's see more of that, and then it's just, you know, briefly played upon, and I'm like, okay, you know, and there's all these great subplots in here. You got the Chris Pratt, you know, Owen Claire thing going on. You got the kids. You got, you know, BD Wong, him having his own thing, Henry Wu. You know, you got the billionaire who's trying to fight N-Gen from weaponized, you know, I mean, there's.
But that's a credit to Michael Crichton being such a fantastic writer. You know?
But I...
No.
I'm a big fan of Michael Crichton, so I would argue with you on that. He is a great writer.
He's a good writer, but in his original novel of The Lost World, there was a lot of this weaponize the dinosaurs, industrial espionage.
Well, see,
stuff
exactly,
going on.
That's what they're trying to get back.
That didn't make it into the movie, and
right.
Actually, they were the worst parts of the Lost World novel.
Well, considering the Lost World novel was a sequel to this movie and not the book, is another whole discussion.
Yeah,
altogether.
That was a strange book.
because
the camo dinosaurs come into the
what?
The camouflage dinosaurs come into the novel versus the. I mean, you didn't see the camouflage dinosaur until this movie.
That's true.
No, but I know Michael Crichton's a great writer. He had nothing to do with the screenplay. So,
well, no, he's dead. He's dead.
No, that's what I'm saying. Is the original two movies were Michael Crichton films. That's why they're so much better.
Right, and give me those two. Oh, that was your point. Okay, I'm sorry. I was trying to... I missed your point. I thought you were talking about this one with all the subplots, and Michael Crichton's writing.
It's because he didn't write this one that he did. There was no focus. It just they were like, oh, yeah, this is an interesting character. Let's do this and this.
So that was your – I apologize. I misinterpreted your statement about Crichton. I deeply apologize on that. So what you were saying true is that you had people here trying to mimic Crichton and doing it.
Bad job.
Well,
which they were. It was a setup film. This really felt like a setup film. And for me, I guess, you know, the way it leaned, you didn't have to go complicated with this one with all the subplots. The way this was, rescue the kids from the dinosaurs again. You want to do an homage to the first one? Fine. You've got an even more bigger Indominus Rex. Great. Do that. You know, leave the weaponizing thing. How many here have seen the remake to Friday the 13th?
I haven't. It sucked.
Paul, did you see it?
Friday the 13th. Yes, I did.
The remake. Okay. Yes. That movie was the first three films crammed into one.
Yeah.
This film felt like it was the first three films crammed into one.
Yeah.
From the beach launching and please tell me I'm wrong, but the beach launching with InGen and loading up all their military guys on the beach to capture the dinosaurs, you know, they looked similar to them. You got the other storyline, you know, from the first one with the kids lost in the park. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the third, I mean, this really felt.
Well, my problem with the weaponizing thing, and this was probably what my biggest problem with the movie was that storyline. Because and I kind of with dread because I know that that's what's going to happen in Jurassic Park 5, which you know damn well they're going to like try to rush in here because this thing is like more popular than you know water in a desert, you know I mean this movie, you know it's not that they were trying to imitate what happened in 1993, it's that they were trying to imitate what happened in 1986. Dude, there was so much in this movie that felt like it was ripped right out of Aliens. I couldn't believe it. and I'm disappointed by that because, okay, we've already had the unscrupulous people in InGen. Yeah, we've known that. We've known that that John Hammond created this with noble intentions and stuff like that. But by having this suddenly never before heard of a military wing of InGen that wants to create biological weapons out of the dinosaurs. InGen, you know what? It just becomes another Weyland-Yutani. It becomes another umbrella corporation with Dr. Wu as Dr. Wexler. You know, maybe call him Dr. Wuxler. I don't know. But you know, it was so disappointing to see it go that. I'm like, really, guys? To the extent where you talked about the imagery of the things recalling the earlier movies. Guys, can we please talk about the scene that was ripped? I mean, I know there's homage and then there's ripoff, and this was a ripoff when they had the soldiers go in and the thing is right on top of them and it starts picking them off and you have the soldiers with the helmet cams and the heart readouts with their names flatlining. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, and Chris Pratt seems to like be looking at the people, like shaming them for what they did with these soldiers. And I'm like, if I was Chris Pratt, I'd be like, I can't believe you ripped off Aliens. This movie, I could not believe they went there to this point. And it's kind of depressing because I see. Because I think that there are moments of real inspiration in this movie. And I see where they're going towards the next movie, because they leave a lot of doors open. And where they're going in the next movie does not look nearly as inspired. And so to not only introduce this as a plot point, but introduce this as maybe the main plot point that other sequels will hinge upon, that was actually probably the biggest letdown of the movie to me. Because I didn't think it was necessary. I think they had an original idea with the dinosaurs, and instead it's turning into the aliens from Alien, zombies from Resident Evil. It's turning into fill in the blank, because by now the evil corporation that wants to create, you know, living weapons, it's become a cliche at this point.
No, and, you know, same thing here. I enjoyed it. but it, the subplots, and don't get me wrong, I don't mind a complicated script, but they had all really good ideas that I would have liked to see fleshed out more, and they all hinted at it, and it took away from the main story for me, because it's like, meanwhile, you know, the kids are trapped, you got Chris Pratt going after him, he's working with Claire, Claire's getting stronger,
I liked her character. I didn't like the inferences that the screenplay was making about her character. I always felt like Bryce Dallas Howard was fighting to maintain that character's dignity.
Yes.
Which of course went up in smoke when the last two lines of dialogue of the film.
It felt to me like they didn't quite know what she was, and I said this in my review. It felt like they didn't quite know how to handle her character or what they exactly wanted to do with her. Did she want to be damsel in distress? Did they want her to be the strong female type? You know, and the way they portray her in the beginning as being this kind of hard-nosed business woman, and then I, you know, they're trying to show the softer side. But for me, I felt like they were up and down with her trying to figure out exactly what they wanted her to completely do. I think they were trying to show some vulnerability, but they went too extreme in one end and then to bring it back. And as Paul said, I completely see it. They wanted for her growth in character, Paul. But you have to admit, she was on a bit more of a extreme
path.
Huh?
A shallow path?
Yeah, you have to say that she seemed to cry at a drop of the hat along with Ty Simpkins. Maybe it was a family trait.
It could be.
But wouldn't you say, though, it felt like at times she was really actually the strong character you wanted her to be, and then the plot needed her to be damsel in distress, and suddenly she's damsel in distress.
Honestly, if I had to fight dinosaurs, I'd be a damsel in distress.
Yeah. That's a good response.
That's a very good response. This is very true. There's a lot of elements I really enjoyed in this film, and we can wrap it up here. There's a lot of things and a lot of potentials, and especially the last 15 minutes of this film, I was all on. Yeah. That dinosaur fight at the end when she went and got Rexy, from that point on, I was 12 years old. I was 12 years old on the edge of my seat going, this is badass.
Well, you know what? That's actually something, you know, if you don't mind, before we wrap up, because I thought that was the most interesting thing that was said in the movie. And you know what? I've mentioned it on other podcasts. Mark, when we did the trailer show, I mentioned we went into it a bit. I thought that it was kind of ballsy for the film to actually take the frustration that the filmmakers must have been feeling making this movie and actually holding it up and as a mirror to the audience to say, see? Because as I mentioned, 1993, Jurassic Park was not yes, it was a huge event movie. It was a big summer blockbuster. We've got like about 12 summer blockbusters every summer now. But, you know, it was more than that. It was really one of the last truly magical movies because we had never seen anything like that. Forget how many giant monster movies there had been. We had never seen anything like that before with the, oh my gosh, the T-Rex and the, you know, the raptors and everything else. I mean, the technology was incredible and the way they did it and the way they made the park so authentic and everything. So it was magical. Well, what happened? 4 years after that, they do The Lost World. And, yeah, people went to see it, but still, even 4 years later, people were like, yeah, and? And then they did another one 4 years after that, and people kind of, even though that movie was pretty enjoyable, Jurassic Park 3, people kind of treated it as, well, it's like a B-movie. Yeah, it was a $100 million B-movie. It's only gotten worse in the 14 years since that movie. Because everybody is constantly looking for the next big thing. Everybody's saying, what can we do to impress these people? What we got to get, especially the younger people, like kids like 8 to 24, like, you know, get those people in there. How are we going to impress them? How are we going to keep them into the thing? Especially now with the internet and everything. Like, you have, so you have like the Zach character whose face is like buried in a phone for the first part of the movie, it actually takes a sea monster doing a belly flop 10 feet in front of him to make him go, oh, you know, and that's what the movie is doing. I mean, and they talk about it with how they created the Indominus Rex. Like, you have dinosaurs already. You took a speech, a creature that was extinct for 80 million years and brought it back into life. And still that's not enough to maintain interest. They have to get a bigger, better dinosaur with corporate sponsorship. I thought that, and I felt like that's what the movie was saying, basically, because let's face it, the movie created that monster. The movie unleashed that monster on us. The movie showed us that it was this bigger, badder thing, because they've seen from past experience, like, oh, just reminding you that we gave you this miracle to begin with doesn't seem to be enough for you assholes anymore. and so I felt like they were actually holding up a mirror and saying how much it takes to impress people, to really grab them and give them that jolt. I think the movie does. It can never come close to the original. It kind of starts to, though.
I'd rather it not.
I gotta tell you, I saw stars in my nephew's eyes. He loved this movie, and God bless him for it. And I was so thrilled. Like, okay, that's good, because I'm the crotchety like guy who's bordering on 40. He's the 10-year-old. He's the one the movie's for. And you know, it was like, you know, how much does it take to keep these people's interest? Because now kids, you know, the attention spans are slower. They're always attached to a screen. Technology keeps on advancing. Trends keep on changing. And I think that the movie did a direct commentary on that, which I actually thought was the most interesting part of the film.
Yeah, and you know, you make a really good point with that. You know, for me, yeah, the original, nothing's going to touch the original, and I didn't go into this expecting to see the original. I guess that's part of the reason why those homage scenes, some of them, I was like, oh, give me something a little different, you know, and stood out for me. But I took my two boys to it. They're 13 and 14 years old. And target demographic, and it was a hit with them. Mm-hmm. And part of my enjoyment was seeing their enjoyment. I chuckled at one scene, and my son went, "Shh, Dad," because he was so into the movie. And I remind myself that, you know, these films, I'm getting on the crotchety end of the bell curve, so these films aren't exactly made for me in mind, but you know, I still enjoyed it. And again, this last dino fight where they had the T-Rex come back, which I thought was great. I thought it was great they brought Rexy back to fight the Indominus. But who here didn't at least feel, Cole, you had to feel a little tinge of excitement, and I know Paul probably did, when the Velociraptor and Rexy teamed up. I couldn't help but love that scene, because I'm like, oh my God, I am 12 again, because that was just so cool. And in our world of superheroes, you had to admit how they handled that final battle scene, I thought was handled great. I thought it was a great bookend to the film. What about you, Cole, did that give you any twinge at all?
Yeah, absolutely. It's terrific. I mean, the action scenes are great. I mean, there's nothing to support them, so you're not invested. But I think it's great. I mean, you know, obviously, again, it's relying on your nostalgia of the first film, because it's the only time you see T-Rex. So, you know, other than that brief little glimpse, so it's not its own. You know, it's not really. I can't give the film a huge merit on that action sequence because it owes nothing to itself. And I'm sorry, I just can't buy the notion that these raptors have been trained.
You just couldn't get over that fact.
Oh, no! These are not the velociraptors from the first two movies? Come on! What? This is ridiculous. Those things wouldn't be trained. They would have all those people eaten in like 10 minutes. Are you kidding?
well, they could have genetically modified them. They've been playing with the genetics for over the last 22 years. So who says they didn't make a better, more subjugated Velociraptor.
Okay. I mean, you know,
the only person who could do anything was the Owen character because that was who they imprinted on him.
Yep. Right. Yeah, you know,
probably the same reason John Hammond made sure that he imprinted on all the Velociraptors, like, I don't want any of these fuckers eating me.
No, for sure, I should say that if you're going to this movie in a good 3D IMAX theater for the action scenes, you know, if you're that type of moviegoer, you're not going to have a bad time. You know, and I don't mean that in a negative way. I think it's a great action film, but I do think it has a lot more in common with it has a lot more in common. I'm not going to name names, but it has a lot more in common with a Michael Bay movie than a Steven Spielberg movie.
Sure. I can see your point on that. Paul, that final sequence, did that really get you going?
Yes.
When you get to see Rexy?
Because, first of all, the build-up, because, I mean, they didn't exactly announce it right away. It was just like, okay, yeah, we need more teeth. And then she goes off. And then it just, there are bunches and bunches of scenes that hinted at it. And then when you got to see her, it was just like, yay! And then you knew the battle was going to be kind of lopsided, because Indominus is supposed to be, like, superior, younger, you know, better. And so, and at first I thought, oh, this battle is short. And didn't...
Yeah.
But then when you actually see, I'm assuming that's Blue.
Yeah, it's Blue.
Going
Blue
in there and just running. I was just like, yes! And that was the one surprise that this movie actually gave me, because I didn't see that coming.
I didn't see it coming either. And when the Velociraptor and Rexy actually paired up against the Dominus, yeah, that made me feel just like a kid. They get that exactly. Scene where Blue hops on top of Rexy and is riding Rexy and then is jumping off and attacking and coming back on top of Rexy. I'm like, oh my god, I've done this with my dinosaurs so many times when I was a kid.
Now see that's a recalling of the first one that you didn't mind.
Right. Yep.
Because in the original, what happens? The raptors are attacking and T-Rex swoops in.
Yep.
Out of nowhere, and we don't know how the hell he got inside. Raptors, but right. We don't know how the hell he got inside, but we don't care.
Okay. You know, he was a stealthy Rex when he wanted to be.
Is Indominus. I mean, I don't care if you can camouflage or not. If you're the type of animal that makes the ground shake whenever you take a step, people are gonna know when you're coming. But I mean, in this movie, they kind of recall that scene by having the raptors. Yeah. Attack the Indominus. So.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, and that, but that, again, that, it still was a variation enough for me that I didn't mind it so much as a direct shot.
Well, she was leading Rexy with the red flare in kind of like the first one too. So
yep.
It's kind of
yeah, there was that too. Like I said, there are a lot of nods to the first, a little more for my taste, but on the whole, I really enjoyed it. You heard here, folks, we do have a mixed bag of emotions over this film. I will say that it was worth the price of admission, even though I did have problems with it on the whole. You go for the dinosaurs. That's why you go for Jurassic World, in all honesty. And you get plenty of dinosaur action in this film. You get to see plenty of dinosaurs in this, which is, what I was hoping for and what I got. So, and the look on my kids' faces, I think, was priceless to me, and them enjoying it, and I'm hoping it opens the door for the other folks. And real quick, so many things come to mind. You guys mentioned Rexy and that that lack of bass in the sound. The sound design in the first one, and I have to get a little nostalgic real quick. This was the first, remember when they came out? DTS.
Yep.
Yes.
It was the first. The theaters were equipped to go and have digital surround sound for the first time, and digital surround made that freaking movie because the T-Rex approached. That's why I went back three times.
That sound, the sound amazing. In there, and I remember when I saw it the first time, it was an early matinee, we got there, there wasn't hardly anybody in the theater, it was their first time using DTS, they didn't have the damn thing mixed right, we had to sit in like the back row of the theater so we wouldn't get deaf because they had the thing so cranked that when the T-Rex first howled, we're like, oh my God, I actually have a headache because you have this too. Because they didn't know how to mix it. It's the first time they handled it. The sound design in Jurassic Park is what helped make the film. That was missing in this film a bit. You didn't have the thuds like you did with the other dinosaurs in the first one, and I think that's the sound design could have been a little better too, to add that extra impact, because that sound in the first one was so important. And I mean, that howl from the T-Rex still to this day is just phenomenal. But I just wanted to throw in sound design in there too, that this one was lacking a little bit of that bass.
I would argue most films have not reached that level of ingenuity in sound design since then, too.
What were you going to say, Paul?
I was sitting next to a metal grate, and even though the volume wasn't loud, it was rattling, so I thought that was interesting, though.
Well, that's maybe they had it at too low of a frequency then, though I'm also getting old and hard of hearing, so...
Now you just picture like the dinosaur roars, and Mark's got one of those big ear horn things going, speak up!
Well, no, it's my tinnitus, so...
But Cole said something earlier, like way earlier at the beginning of this podcast about Godzilla. Godzilla's roar was 100 times better than this movie's roar.
Yes. Oh, good point. Good point. Yeah, I agree. Totally.
Yeah, in general, folks, it's a fun movie. If you're looking for, it's not exactly family friendly. This is a higher body count than I think all three films put together. So that I'm going to warn you on it. There was more blood than I expected in this, which I actually really enjoyed. But you do have a mixed bag of emotions here. So we're going to wrap it up for the evening. Hope you take this for what it will, what the discussion, hope you got something out of it, something to think about. So it definitely is making money, made $500 million worldwide in 3 days. So you know where that film's going. And all the Marvel fans are going, damn. Because it beat Age of Ultron, I believe.
It beat the original Avengers, too.
Yeah,
it was second at first, and then when they revised it, it was that. And you know that there is somebody Monday morning at the Asylum movie headquarters that said, guys, next movie, Dinosaur Avengers.
Why not? They did the Grim Avengers.
They already did Fairy Tale Avengers. Yeah.
They did the Grim Avengers, which I still have to see.
So do I. I haven't seen their Avengers ripoff, their Fairy Tale ripoff, and their Mad Max ripoff. I have to see them all.
Yes. So we'll wrap it up tonight real quick here. We'll just catch everybody. Yes, we are finally wrapping it up now. So, Cole, go ahead. Where can people find you?
Yeah, I am on Facebook, Cole Meredith, or Horror Roar, R-O-A-R, or Shadows and Lovers Productions. Seek me out. We'll talk movies.
Awesome. And Paul?
You can find me at forsakenfilmreviews.wordpress.com.
Awesome. And Scott?
Well, if you thought I could go on and on here, boy, oh boy, you haven't seen nothing yet. You can read my rambling reviews and catch up on all the podcasts and web series that I do at movieocrity.com. That's kind of your one-stop shop for all that.
Awesome. And you can find links, as always, as well as our archives and the stuff that I do if you're at all interested on specialmarkproductions.com. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for joining us in this conversation of Jurassic World. It was definitely where I thought it would go with it. So I appreciate that. I hope everyone has listened and enjoyed this conversation. Please check out our other episodes. Make sure you rate us and like us on iTunes. Go to podcastworld.net, I believe it is, and go vote for us in the TV and movie category. Get us up to the favorite podcast of the month. Would love to see that. And you can email us at spoilerroom.smp@gmail.com if there's a film or something you'd like to mention to the Spoiler Room crew here. Because here on the Spoiler Room, the conversation is fresh, though we do spoil the movies.